word for a highway. The answer is autostrada. Strada is, you know, it's related to this word over here that we have, trottoirs, okay? The French word, for example, trottoir, it's a sidewalk. Okay, so you know, there is a connection between the word that we hear. However, this word also looks a lot like a different word, namely theatrios. What is theatrios? Theaters. So, at any rate, he took the stones either in order to pave, literally cover, that's the meaning of the word keep over here, to cover either a pavement to make a road, understand, right? Or maybe in order to make a theater or something like that, because we know, I mean, the Greeks, the Romans, they had theaters, and obviously they were made of stone. So he decided to do his bit to it. So, at any rate, all right, the guy takes the stones, right? And what does it show? What does it show about his feeling towards the stones? Right, he has no esteem for it. Even though technically it's supposed to be a sign of worshipping the idol, but nevertheless, in his mind, it doesn't have it done. It's not that important. So he takes the stones and he uses it for something else, okay? So Matoros, in that particular case, yeah, you can walk on the sidewalk or the road or which has been paved with these stones, you understand? But Yisrael Shehevi Avodim Lamarkulas, let's say a Jew did the same thing. He picked up some of the stones from the statue of Mercury or in front of Mercury, right? And he used it in order to cover a road or whatever the tartios, or the highways, or the theaters, whatever it is. Sasuras. Anyway, for the Jew, it is prohibited. Right? Am I? And why should it be prohibited? Why can't we say that this is similar to an idol which broke by itself, which according to the Mishnah is permissible? Right? So, what do we say? So, Hanami, we say, in this particular case too, it's Kidarava. We follow Rava's opinion, who, as we said a few moments ago, Rava says that if you lift it, you are taking possession of it, and if it has any association, whatever, with idolatry, then it is prohibited. Okay? They're still arguing this this point again. Another example, this one. Another point that was argued by Rabbi Yochanan against Reb Shem ben Lakish, or Reish Lakish, we call him. Oyved Kechovim. You have the case of an idolater. Sheshipa Avedes Kechovim Nitzorko. He went to the idol, and he shaved off a piece of it because he needed it. Let's say it was a wooden idol, right? And he needed a wooden chip, for whatever reason it may be, okay? So, he went over to it, and he had a hammer, a chisel, whatever he had, right? And he took off, he shaved off a piece of it, okay? So in that particular case, right, he v'shipu yeho mutor l'tzorko, right. In other words, he v'shipu yeho mutor. All right, that, in that case, right. All right, it's not quite as easy. All right, I'll review it again because it's slightly different. All right, we start in Oyved Kechovim, the goy, the idolater, right? Sheshipa Avinas Kechovim Nazorko, right? What did he do? He did it because he needed a piece, as we said, a chip off the block, okay? So he was Shipuyah Mutorin, right? So, as far as the piece of the chip, right, or the idol, it is permitted to him, because what has he done? He's already taken away the sanctity in his own mind of the idol. Understand? But the Sarko, he asuro, shipuyeh mutorin. However, if he's doing it for the sake of the idol itself, maybe he wants to make it a little not prettier or something like that, then in that particular case, the idol is prohibited unto him, but the chip he can still use. I'm talking about a goy.
He's a goy.
Okay. The Yisrael, however, what if it was a Jew, Sheshipa Vidis Kechavim, he did the same thing, he shaved off a chip of the idol. So Bein Letzorko, whether he was doing it for his own purpose or whether he was doing it in order to make the idol look more presentable or something like that, in any case, he was Shipuyeh Asurin, both the idol and also the chips are prohibited unto him. And again, the same question: am I, for what reason? Why can't we compare it again, like to the case of an idol which broke by itself? It says, again, we apply what Rava had said, that once he picks up the chip, or he picks up the idol in order to do something with it, then he's violated the rule that says that you cannot do it. Aisvei. A similar argument. Rabbi Yossi says, Sheikhek Zera Leruach, or Matir Layob, right? Why can't, he says, person crush the idol, right? Scatter it to the wind, or throw it into the ocean? There are all different ways of doing what? Of, as we would say, bittul. In other words, you make it null and void. And if you remember, I mentioned it between Mincha and Marv last week, that besides burning chametz, there are alternate ways to dispose of it. That, for example, you break it into pieces that are so tiny and then scatter it in the wind. That's another way of disposing chametz. Same thing is true to take it and throw it into the ocean. There's a discussion about that. But in the final analysis, particularly if it's in the Red Sea, the Dead Sea, the Yamamel, the Salt Sea, it will certainly destroy whatever chametz there is. But modern problem arises when you have Erev Shabbos, when you have Shabbos as Erev Pesach. How do you get rid of the chametz that you may have saved for the early morning meal? You understand? And there's still something left. So the answer is, you crumble it and flush it down the toilet. It's the same as throwing it into the ocean. You understand? Same thing. Okay. All right. Don't try to just take a piece of challah and throw it in. You have to crumble it first. So they say the same thing over here, right? So why can't you dispose of the idol that way, right? Crush it till it becomes like a powder, and you can scatter it to the wind, or you throw it into the ocean. So Amr Lo, they said, making it into a powder. Afina so zevel, right? So you know what's going to happen? What happens is that the powder can become used as fertilizer, Okay? And if it becomes fertilizer, uchsiv, it's written that for as far as a Jew is concerned, lo yidbak miyolcha miyuma min hacherem, that nothing from the cherem in this case something which is prohibited to a Jew, right? In other words, the idol, nothing of it should cling unto you. In other words, you should not have the slightest use of it, even if you were to use it as simply as fertilizer. You understand? Have nothing to do with the idol. But again, the same question is asked. Am I? Why not? Right? Why can't we consider it again like, you know, an idol which has been broken, which broke by itself? So he says again, again, we follow this opinion of Rava that says once you lift it, once a Jew lifts it, it's as if it was his own and he's in possession of the idol. Okay. All right. I think we'll stop at this particular point. Continue from the rest of the daf when we get back again. And yes, Hashem, 3 weeks from tonight. I want to wish all of you a kosher, Freilich, and Pesach.
Will you be here
Shabbos? Shabbos, I'll still be here, sure.
Let's see.
Yes, we are down towards the bottom of the page, beginning the word Esrei, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 lines from the bottom. 9 fine line lines from the bottom. Avodah Zarah, Membeis, Omet Aleph, right, 42a. And tonight is the 26th of April in the year 2006. Now we continue. All right. So, I have to go up a little bit more. Right. No, that's correct. All right. So, Esrei Rabbi Yossi Bar Yosef. The Esrei refers again to guess who? The arguments here have been between Reish Lakish and between Rabbi Yochanan. And as we see, Rabbi Yochanan is the one who adopts the very strict view, no good, don't touch, don't get involved with an idol and things like that, right? And he bases it also upon the opinion of Rava, namely that, you know, the minute that you take the idol in your hands as a Jew, then it's as if you have attained possession of it, and therefore it is absolutely prohibited. Whatever you're doing, if you want to destroy the idol, but it's prohibited. As compared to an idol which is either shenishtabro be'aleho, in other words, the idol itself, it broke for some reason, right? In which case it loses its sanctity, in most cases. Or the other possibility that the goy decides that his idol doesn't help him in any case, and so he rejects it and he does anything. He'll chip away something from the idol, and you know, to mar it, to deface it, whatever it may be, is a sign of the fact that he has no more faith in it. In which case, then a Jew can possibly have hador. It should make, not that the Jew is to serve the idol, but he can maybe sell it or something like that if he finds it and you know, get some benefit out of it. So he continues again with the question. He quotes a Rabbi Yossi ben Yasya Omer, who says what? Motzo tzuras drakam v'rosh ha'chosuch, right? If you find a picture of a dragon or the form of a dragon upon an object, right? And the head of the dragon is cut. So, Sofek Eved Kechavim Chasoche, Sofek Yisrael Chasoche. So, the question is, who is the one who cut off the head? Was it the Goy, or was it a Jew, right? So, Mutar, at any rate, Rabbi Yosef does says, it's permitted. Why? Because it's a question of suffix. What is suffix?
Doubt.
It's doubt. We don't know. So in this particular case, we saw that you can be lenient in the case of doubt. We've had other examples of this case too. If you remember that case of doubt, sometimes we can decide it in a lenient fashion. Of course, there's always a possibility that who cut it off? The goy. In that case, then, as we said, you know, then it's mutabano, okay? You can use it, derive some benefit from it. But, vada Yisrael chasochi, however, if we know definitely that it was the Jew who cut it off, right, then what? It's also done as prohibited. Okay.
What is the logic to doing this?
Logic is still based upon Rava's statement.
About what?
Rava's statement. Namely, that if you handle, something that may possibly be connected with idolatry, then in that case, it's as if you have acquired possession of it, and therefore that's why he prohibits it. Okay? That's the idea.
Okay. It appears to me that the entire dragon would be an idol.
Right.
If it's the head is cut off,
yeah.
Its value is eliminated.
Correct.
If a Jew cuts off the head,
yeah.
Maybe the supposition is that he wants to destroy this figure from being an idol.
We understand that.
Then why would another Jew who comes across it be prohibited from touching
okay.
it?
Okay. All right. The question that you asked actually has been asked again and again on this lot,
right.
Okay?
My fault. Okay.
Yeah. It's been asked again and again. They say, am I? Why? And the answer that they give, again, is because of this dictum of Rava, who says, you know, that the minute that the Jew takes possession of it, then in that case, he's taking possession of an idol.
Or any part of it. Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Even to destroy it, they mustn't touch it.
Right.
Because, you know, again, it brings me to mind, on their travels, they were often told when they go into the city to destroy their idols. Remember? And,
well.
You know, that was part of the...
When the Jews conquered Eretz Yisrael, they were told to do that.
Right. So
they didn't always, unfortunately. We always read that the people of Israel sinned, they backslid, they worshipped the Canaanite idols and things like that. So obviously, they didn't destroy all the idols the way they should have, okay?
But I think maybe what Sylvia's trying to ask is that in that case they were touching the idols to destroy them, just as the Jews cut off the... But that was, again, was permitted because they were before Rava.
Right, as I say, right. I mean, between what they did in the time of the Tanakh and the time of Rava, the many centuries had passed, right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. So they ask again the same question, am I? Why should this be so? Why can't we put it in the same class as an idol that broke by itself? And it says, Hochanami, Kidarava. Alright? This case too, we're still following whose opinion? Rava. Okay? Eisve, so now they ask another kasha. Rabbi Yosef Yoimer, he says, "Af lo yirokes b'yavos hakshomim, mipnei shehanadiyo nosheres aleihen." Okay. Here's the situation. We have what we call a tree which is sacred to idolatry. It's considered like an idol, or it's a sacred. It's connected with idolatry. It's what we call in Hebrew an asherah. Okay, an asherah. So here's this tree, and the Jew wants to plant vegetables in the shadow of the tree. Okay? This tree is not an evergreen tree, but it's a tree which has leaves, and the leaves fall off, you know, when the autumn comes, right? Okay. So that's the situation right now. So, Rabbi Yossi is asking the question, he says. How about the question of planting vegetables, right, And when? During the rainy season, right? Because of Israel, when is the rainy season? It will fall in the winter, okay? Fall in the winter. So what is happening? Right? In other words, the leaves are falling down upon the ground, and then, of course, what is the result of it? They are fertilizing the ground as they decompose, they fertilize, okay? So, Amai, the hay, kavod, why can't we say that the Jew can take advantage of these leaves that have fallen upon the vegetables that he wants to plant? Because the leaves, we can say they are like an idol that fell down by itself. Remember, the tree itself is sacred, right? So, he says, no, that's a different case also. The Ikar Avedos Kechovim Kayemes, because the tree is still standing, and that is the major source of idolatry in connection. In other words, it is an idol by itself, okay? Or it's worshipped as an idol by the idolaters. So, even though the leaves are down on the ground, but nevertheless, these leaves are still coming from the idol itself. And get back again to what we, the pasuk that we had before, just a few moments ago, that you heard, which means that nothing should cling to your hand from that which is prohibited, a prohibited object. Okay?
Yeah. Plant
under
that tree.
So that's what he's saying. Don't plant the vegetables under that tree. Exactly what he's saying. Yeah. Right.
It's like they were using the tree as a god or an
that's
object.
Correct. Right. Yeah. They definitely, I mean, they read, you know, first of all, there's a specific prohibition where the Torah says, well, Sita Lacha Asher Vah called Eitzel Mizbach Ad Hashem Elokecha, that's number one. Namely, in the Beis HaMikdash, you are prohibited from planting a tree over there because of the fact that Asher Vah, in other words, since the pagans did precisely that, therefore, in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's Beis HaMikdash, we don't want to have this. Okay. And then we keep on reading in the Nevi'im how, you know, the Canaanites, they worshipped not just Baal and Astarte, Ashtaris, but also Asherah as well, the sacred trees. It's also part of the Canaanite religion. So, therefore, this is what we want to prohibit it because it's associated in the mind of the goy,
right, well,
as a religious symbol. Right.
So did this refer to all the deciduous trees or was it only in specific places? In
other words, it wasn't specific places, not just
all trees. Was this a general
rule? No. I'm not talking about a tree which has no religious significance. We're talking only about
those
trees that were associated,
okay,
a sacred grove, okay?
Okay.
I mean, the Greeks, the Romans, they also had sacred groves. So, but, I mean, a stama tree in the Veltaline, that has nothing to do with
correct.
It.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
These sacred groves, the Romans and the Greeks permitted even Jews to plant vegetables underneath them? How is this
possibly they did? I don't know.
It sounds,
I wasn't there.
Unbelievable.
I wasn't there. I have to assume that. This is a case
maybe
that they seriously considered.
Maybe the tree is in the garden of a man who was an idolater.
Yeah.
And he doesn't live there anymore. A Jew is living in that house now. But the tree is in his backyard.
No, the question
is, sacred tree, somebody's
if
backyard.
It's sacred. Maybe. Does the goy continue to worship at this tree? Does it consider a sacred shrine? That's what the question is.
It's
right.
A chutzpah, but you don't think about it.
Well, right. I know. It's amazing. And also, I have another question, which is maybe a silly question, but remember, you're not supposed to touch the... Okay. Well, let's say somebody... I mean, really, you have to be a hot spot. Somebody plants his cucumbers or whatever, and he wants to use the leaves as fertilizer.
Yeah.
What if he has the idea that, well, I don't want to use the leaves as fertilizer, but can I rake them away with a hoe or a rake and still plant under that tree? Now, this is like a different question.
I would say no.
So no. Okay.
Why? Because you're improving the area over there. Under those circumstances, I mean, still, it's too closely associated with the tree itself.
These are like giant fences that they're building.
Yes,
you're
right. Right.
Just
I want to make sure, right, that the Jew is not attracted to Aved Azara.
Even if no Jew ever planted vegetables under there, I even thought about planting vegetables. They're still making the point of. That don't even dare to think about it.
Right.
That would be wrong, too.
True.
I think it's just part of the...
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, there's no question. Today we can't conceive of the power that Aved Azara had among the other nations.
Right.
The very fact that even in the, you know, in the Bible that we read how Jews are warned not to be attracted to it. And we have examples, I mean, where Jews did. I mean, take, for example, Ahab, okay? King Ahab. He married Jezebel, okay? Married her, and immediately, what did she do? She introduced the worship of Baal. And she brought in priests of Baal and things like that. And so, you know, it was a fight between the handful of people who remained loyal to God and those who are actively promoting the worship of Baal and the others.
You're right. On Har Carmel, there were two groups of priests.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, by the way, that's also listed in the Shas Chayrim, I mean, the fact that Eliyahu built an altar.
A temporary altar.
Right. Yeah. Right. Of course, normally, the altar should not have been built over there.
Right.
Like a bummer in this particular case, but the Shas Chayrim, he had to do something in order to get the Jews to wean them away from it. Okay. So, anyway, on the next side of the page over there, we are now on Mem Beis, Omid Beis, right? It says, V'hoshi Puyon, the Ikai Vodas Kachovim Kayemis, right? So now they come back to something that they said just a little bit previously. The shipui, what is shipui? So we learned that means like you take chips off the tree. Now, right, you take chips off the tree, okay?
Shavings,
right, that's what it means, okay? And still it says the ikar avinus ha-kayemis, right? The idol is still standing there, meaning the tree itself, right? The katane, and what did we learn before? We learned before that what? The sorko, if it is for the sake of the tree, or the sake of the idol, in other words, then it is prohibited. In other words, if you're doing the shaving of the tree in order to improve the tree itself, understand? So in that case, the shavings would be prohibited, right? Whereas we said, Rishipuyeha Mutar, that if it was not, then the shavings would be permissible, because it would mean that what? That the idolater is shaving off something from the tree. In other words, he's denying that part of the tree is being sacred. Rafuna Bereda of Yeshua Omar, he says that the fee she'en avidas kechovim b'teilo terkede lasa. As long as the tree is growing, and it's growing in a natural fashion, the fact that leaves fall from it, or something, so in that case, it is prohibited because of the fact that, you know, the idol is still there, the tree itself being the idol. So, in any case, as we see, Rabbi Yochanan, Rava, they're all very, very strict about this, okay? So Esri Rabbi Shem Ben Lakish, who happens to be the more makel in this particular case, so he asked Rabbi Yochanan, he says, yeah, all right, how about the following situation? Cain, Sheberosha Ilan Shal Hekdesh. Okay? You have Cain. Cain is a nest. Okay?
Cain what?
It means a nest. A nest. And where is this nest situated? It's on the top of a tree, which is Hekdesh. Now, Hekdesh means that, yes, that somebody has dedicated this tree to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Or it belongs, it's part of the possessions of the Beis HaMikdash. Right. Because the Beis HaMikdash, I mean, we are aware of, you know, of let's say, of animals being dedicated, you know, for sacrifices. But the Beis HaMikdash also had others. Namely, they had a Hekdesh in that a person, take a look, the last chapter in Sefer Vayikra, you could dedicate a field to the Beis HaMikdash, you could dedicate a house to the Beis HaMikdash, you might dedicate implements to the Beis HaMikdash.
When you say dedicate,
yeah, it means that it becomes part of the temple possession,
right.
Temple treasure.
So it's on
right.
Another property and it's away from
right.
It.
Right. Yeah, we learn, if you take a look over there, that the field, let's say you want to dedicate your field to the Beis HaMikdash. You can redeem that field for yourself, but you have to have a committee to assess the value. You understand? And then you have to pay that value to the Beis HaMikdash.
Plus the field.
Right, right. So that's what they did very often. They wanted to do it as a donation, so they gave it as a donation, but it could belong permanently to them, or you could redeem it from the Beis HaMikdash. So if you redeemed it, then you have to pay the assessed value, plus usually an additional amount of money, you know, let's say a fifth more or something like that.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So this is a tree which has been dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, okay? And on top of this tree, along came a bird and built a nest over there. Okay? So, this is the question that Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish is now asking Rabbi Yochanan. All right, so you have this nest on the top of the tree. This tree belongs to Hekdesh, to the temple treasury. And he says, Lo nehenin, velo moali. He says two things about it. First of all, you're not allowed to have any advantage. You can't make any use or have any advantage of it. That's okay. But he also says, "Velo moalin." Now, what is moalin? This is the word that we call me'ilah. Me'ilah means, in this particular case, that you've taken something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and you use it for your own purpose without having redeemed it from the Beis HaMikdash. You understand? So, this is a form of trespass, okay? And in the Torah, if you are guilty of me'ilah, then in that particular case, how do you make up for it? So, obviously, first of all, you have to, you know, repay the value plus a fine of a fifth, you know, 20% and so on, okay? And in addition, you have to bring a and ushered a trespass offering to the Beis HaMikdash in order to get fair and square, okay?
So the nest that's in the tree that belongs to the thing also is part of the property.
That's correct. But the point that he's making over here is that while you can't take any advantage of it, according to Rish Lakish, but at the same time, you're not guilty of trespassing. In other words, of taking unfair advantage of the Beis HaMikdash if you do something with that nest for yourself. Obviously, what do you need this nest for?
It says
Balomal, that's what I'm saying. You don't commit Behilot, according to him. You understand?
What
does Lo Nehanim mean? Lo Nehanim means that, for example, you cannot use it for any of your own purposes, and at the same time, the fact that you took it from Hektish, you're still not guilty of Me'ilah in this case. In other words, you would not have to pay the extra amount, and you wouldn't have to bring the korban Me'ilah in order
to atone for it. What would be the purpose of taking the nest? To remove the birds from it?
That might be one reason.
Keep the birds away.
Yeah. Or the other one would be to take twigs that the birds use in order to construct the nest and use it to make a fire.
That would be enjoyment of the nest.
But you ask me, why would a person want to do it?
That's
the reason why. It's either one
that,
or the other.
It would be trespass.
Right.
If he did that, it would be trespass. But if he removed it and destroyed it just so to keep the birds away and keep the tree clean, that would not be trespass.
Well, it may not be. According to him, anyway, it's not trespass, okay? All right? So far, that's the situation.
And what about the eggs in the nest when the bird flies away?
All right. I mean, that already, as we know, is subject to a different rule. I mean, it's written over there, lo sekacha eim al habon, right? That you cannot take both the mother and, the eggs or the young ones. Okay. So far that's Hektish, okay? So now they ask the next question. And how about Berosh HaShalashera? And what if the nest is where?
Next to
it. On top. No, it's on top of a tree which is dedicated to idolatry. Understand? First one we said is part of the Beis HaMikdash property, right? Now how about a tree which belongs to idolatry? So what do you do with that case? So it says, Yatis Bekone, right? You know what he can do in order to get rid of it? He can take a stick and hit it so that it falls to the ground. Okay? So, Kosal Kadate, if you think that the reason is that Kegon Sheshofra Bimimenu, right? Eitzim Bikinso Behen, if you think that what has happened, that the bird itself has broken branches, has broken twigs, right? And then it nested in them, in other words, you made a nest for it, right? Bikotone, and still we learn what? Yatis Bikone, right? That you have to take a stick and hit it in order to get it down, okay? So, how can you do something like that when what? This tree is dedicated to idolatry. And therefore, presumably, the nest itself is also part of idolatry. I mean, just as we said before, that the leaves that fell, right, while the tree is still standing, are prohibited to be used. So why can't we say, then, that the same thing is true of this business, with the bird's nest, okay? So they say, Halacha b'bayaskin. What kind of a case are we talking about over here? As far as what kind of a nest are we talking about? So he says, Kigon, for example, the ISA Eitzim b'almo v'kinso behem. It's a case where we assume or we notice that what? That the bird simply took twigs from someplace else and made a nest from them. Okay? And the Kadame, and note very carefully the text, the Katani that we have learned, Gabe Hekdesh, that in connection with the Hekdesh, Loi Nehenin, the Lo Moalin, right? So we say that you cannot use it for any advantage, but by the same time, you're not trespassing with it. So, Iyamit Bishlamo, the Isa Eitz in the Alba. So, if we say that, okay, the bird brought, you know, pieces of wood, or twigs, whatever you want to say it, from someplace else, Sahaini the Kotone, Gabi Hekdesh, then in that particular case, this is applying it to the case of the tree of Hekdesh. This is when we say, Lo Nehenin, Lo Baalin. Lo Nehenin, why can't we take advantage of it if it belongs to, the, you know, to Hekdesh? If we assume what? That the nest itself was not constructed from the wood of the tree, but from somebody else's, you know, from other wood that the bird had brought. So why can't we have a Noah? So he says, Lo Nehen Min Rabbanan. This was a rabbinic decree. No. Okay? The Lo Ma'alid, as far as the question about trespassing, he says, is a Raisa. This is derived from the law of the Torah, the Lo Kadishe. Because in the final analysis, these twigs that came from someplace else were not Kodesh, the words sacred, okay? Elo, but the Amrit Shavro Eitzim Imeno, in Sabahem. But if you say that the bird did what? It broke branches of the tree itself that we're talking about, and it nested, made a nest out of it. Amai lo moalin. So, how come you say that you're not, you know, you're not committing trespass in that case? Or Kadishe, right? And the final analysis, they are holy. So he says, Bide Iria. So we have to look for a different explanation. We have to say, Hocha, Begidulon, Haboyin, the Achamekan, Askin. We're talking about what grows after the original tree was planted, because so far, and these are the opinion, ain meila begidulin, that the branches that grew subsequently after the planting of the tree, so they are not subject to the law of meila trespass. But the tree itself, of course, is subject to that law. Okay? For Rabbi Abohu, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Abohu comes and he asks a different question. He asks about the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. He says, "My yatis, what? Why does he have to hack with a hack? You know, why does he have to take a stick in order to knock off the? Why, for example, can't he climb up to the tree? Why can't he climb the tree?" So the answer is right. That would be Hanor. In other words, that means that he's using something sacred for his own advantage if he climbs it. Okay. So that is prohibited. But he says, Yatis Befrochen. This is what you asked before. What is he doing it for? The answer is, because he wants to get the young birds. That's why.
Yeah,
frog, right. It's the young birds. Right. He wants the young birds. He wants to make a meal out of them. I mean, the law in the Torah only says that lo sikacha im al habonim. Okay, in other words, you cannot take the young birds while the mother is still there. But if the mother is not there, then you're permitted, you see, to take this young bird to your food. Right. So Amale Rabbi Yaakov, the Rabbi Yirmiyah, Bar Tachlifa. So Rabbi Yaakov said to Rabbi Yirmiyah, Bar Tachlifa, he said, Aspro Loch, Befrochem. I'll explain to you, he says. When it comes to Efrochem, these young birds, right? Khan, the Khan, Mutarid. Why are the birds forbidden to be taken? Because birds don't know any boundary. You understand? They may be in the nest now, but they come from someplace else and so on. So that being the case, you're permitted to, you're not really trespassing. This is the idea. Not trespassing. But the Beitzim, as far as the eggs are concerned, Sushed Ananda Maisa, Khan the Khan, Asur. Eggs are prohibited. Why? Why are they prohibited? Because they are there, and it's like almost like an integral part of the tree. So Rav Ashi says, and if you have young birds who still require their mother's attention, it's as if they are eggs. In other words, you can't touch them either. It's only when these young birds become mature enough to be able to fly. Tonight is the 3rd of May in the year 2006. We continue now in Gemara Veda Zora, Daf Mem Beis, Omid Beis, with a brand new Mishnah. Mishnah, of course, actually is a continuation of something that we already had before, but they're going now to explain about the problem of various objects that have have Avodah Zorah, actually, it's as part of their design, shall we say. Okay? All right. So the Mishnah, first of all, begins by saying that we're in the middle of the page, incidentally. And it says, Habotze Kalim, Balehem Tsuras Chama, Tsuras Levona, Tsuras Drakon, Yolichem Liam HaMelech. All right. So the Mishnah begins by saying that if somebody finds utensils of some sort, whatever it may be, okay, then in that case, if they have a design of the, or a picture of the sun, or a picture of the moon, or a picture of a dragon, you have to take it and throw it into the Dead Sea. In other words, you have to destroy it. That's all. You cannot have any use from it. Okay? That's what he says.
So what are the things? The dragon?
Sun, the moon, and the dragon. That's what the Mishnah says. Okay. Right.
Is there any reason
yes.
why they wouldn't mention stars too?
We'll get to it.
Pardon?
We'll get to it. I mean, the Gemara is actually is going to expand upon the mission. Okay.
Why do you throw it into the Dead Sea? Because the salt will eat it up.
Absolutely.
Particularly if it's metal.
It's an excellent disposal method.
But also nobody will go there to reclaim it.
Do people go to the Dead Sea?
Who they throw things now into the Dead Sea.
Today, whether they do it or not, I don't know.
No,
well,
the Dead Sea.
Yeah, but eventually it would be destroyed, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's like polluting the water.
You're right, of course. No question about it. But don't drink from the Dead Sea.
No. when they went through the desalination
Which water were they desalinating? They were trying to desalinate actually Mediterranean water. Right. Okay. Of course, it's a salt sea also.
Yes, of course. But not
you can't compare it to the Dead Sea. Right. Why we say the Dead Sea, but in reality, I mean, that the Hebrew name is Yam HaMelech, the salt sea. It's what it means, you know. Salt sea. Right.
Good evening. Right. Environmentally or geologically, why that water is like that?
It's so salty.
Yeah.
Okay. The explanation is this. That part of the world, okay, is what they call a rift. In other words, geologically, whatever you want to say, okay, it's a great big depression. And as you're probably aware, while where the Jordan starts, up in the north, let's say, near the Lebanese border,
yeah.
Okay? There, it's quite high because, you know, this is the mountains of the Galil, okay? So let's say it's about 2,000 feet above level or something, above sea level, okay? But very soon there's a drop, and by the time that you get to the Yam Kinneret, the Jordan is at sea level. And as it continues flowing, it continues to fall lower, 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 until finally it gets into the Dead Sea, which is something like 1,200 feet below sea level, and is considered the lowest point on Earth. Okay? So it has no escape from it. Everything comes into it, but it has no escape. Has no escape. So as a result of that, this is the reason why as time went on, you know, the various salt, potash, whatever, I mean, and all these things, you know, have collected in the Dead Sea.
But the Jordan itself is not a salt
water. No. But once it comes into the Dead Sea, at that point.
From the earth.
Yeah. All right, so the Mishnah then stresses that if you find, by the way, I want to put stress on the word find, motse, very first word over there, because as we study the Gemara, that, you know, continues the discussion on this, we'll see that there's a difference between motse, somebody finding, and somebody who actually makes something like this, osa. Okay, so that's important. There's a difference between finding and between actually making these things. Okay. All right. So that's the first part of the mission. Okay.
Sorry, can I just ask you to translate Ada Amotse Kaling Galokins?
Yes. Yes. If somebody finds various Kalim could be vessels, it could be utensils, it could be an object. I would say objects. That's right. You find objects. You know, various kinds. Drinking vessel or something like that. Later on we'll be talking about rings and things like that and so on. Okay? So, if you find it and it has on it a picture of the sun or the moon, or a dragon, okay?
Right.
So he has to throw it into the Yam HaMelech, okay?
Why is it a gold one? It's made out of gold, you have to get rid of it. If it's only ordinary metal,
we'll get to it in a moment. A little bit patience, okay?
Right.
Right. Okay. Little patience. All right, so that's part A of the Mishnah. Part B, Rabin Shimon ben Gamliel loymer, hold it.
True.
Yeah, all right, okay. Yeah. So part B says, Rabin Shimon ben Gamliel says, She'al ha-mechubodim asurin, she'al ha-mevuzin mutarin, which means that if we find this design upon vessels or upon objects which are considered sort of like precious things, in other words, literally honored, bechubadim, right? Then in that particular case, he says they have to get rid of it, they are prohibited, but she'al ha-mevuzin mutarin. But if it is upon an object which is considered just an ordinary object. And, you know, people don't attach any particular significance to the fact that it has such a design upon it. Then in that particular case, it is permitted to keep, you know, this object. Right.
Ordinary, just ornamental.
Right.
It was intended to be ornamental in any way.
Correct.
Or usable.
Correct. Right. Okay. But I have to stress, however, at this particular point, to us this whole concept of Aveda Zora is so foreign, because we're not living in a society where we have that kind of addiction, shall we say, to idolatry as existed in the time of the Talmud. Okay? In the Greek world, in the Roman world, the Egyptian world, and so on, I mean, Babylonian, you know, there, Avodah Zorah was a very, very strong business, you see. And, needless to say, they wanted to make objects to glorify their Avodah Zorah, and at the same time, in many cases, they actually worshipped them as well. They felt, you know, a religious significance. I mean, I don't want to make any invidious comparison, but the closest that we have, you know, in our culture would be like, for example, the Catholic Church, where, you know, they have statues, pictures, and stuff like that. And then they have these Christopher medals. They have rosaries and stuff like that, you know, they sort of venerate these things, you see. They use it as part of their worship and things like that. But still, we don't consider the Christians or the Catholics, you know, we don't consider them as idolaters.
That's a very interesting point.
Yes, they do.
A movie about the Jews of India.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because they're living in a culture where there are many, many religions.
Right. There, that's true. There you have Aveda Zora.
And there is a... So they were pretty aware of that, of how different religion like Judaism was from these other religions.
Right.
But on the other hand, in India, for some reason, there was less persecution of Jews throughout the century than there were in, quote, the monotheistic.
Yeah, that's true.
So it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. But they were more tolerant, all right.
Tolerant.
Yeah. Well, look, when Jews lived among the Greeks and the Romans, at times they were tolerant, and at times they persecuted Jews. I mean, you never know, you know, what was going to be. It all depended upon the politics, upon the whims of the people who ruled the country, and so on. I mean, we talk about the Golden Age in Spain, for example, okay? Jews were living in a Mohammedan culture over there. But, nevertheless, the fact is that Maimonides had to flee. He and his family, they had to leave Spain because of persecution, and they had to leave Morocco because of persecution, and finally they found asylum in Egypt, okay? And so, you know, it all depends upon
the time,
what, right.
When he found asylum in Egypt, they were not Muslim, they were...
They were. Oh, yeah,
were
yeah. Muslim. Oh, yes, absolutely. Of course, yes.
400 years.
Right. I mean, the Hijra is something like what? Right. Yeah.
Egypt and maybe
right. 640. Yeah, and then they conquered, you know, all the surrounding countries, you know, over there.
Yeah.
And they became Muslim, right?
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Except what's modern day Turkey.
Yeah. Because we don't want to have any Hanoah, in other words, any use, any profit out of Aveda Zorah. pasuk that we have, and we've already mentioned it several times, that they quoted, is V'lo yidbak v'yotcho ne'umo min hacher. Nothing of these things, you know, which are to us an abomination, should cling to you. Okay? So in other words, a Jew has to be careful not to be involved with Aveda Zara. Period. Okay. And as I said, they certainly were living in a civilization where people actually worshipped these idols. It didn't have to be just a statue or a picture. It could be even, in their drinking glass or something like that, and a spoon or something. You understand? They worshipped these things. They wanted to show that they venerated their Aveda Zorah by picturing them upon the things that they were using.
Would it also possibly be used in their services, even if they didn't venerate the item itself? It
possibly.
Used in their services,
possibly.
Which would give it that.
Right. There was a possibility. It's Gemara Psochim, which speaks about a zuz. Now, you've heard the word zuz. We say it on Chagadya. What does zuz mean? It's a coin.
Oh, yeah, somebody zuz in.
Right, right, of course, right, okay. Yeah, right.
Zuz
is a coin. Right, right. Zaben Abba Bistri zuz, right? The father bought it for two zuz. Okay, okay. Roman coins or Greek coins had pictures of their gods, their goddesses, and so on and so forth. So they were worshipped. They were venerated, okay? Same thing is true very often of the emperor, who was considered a divine being or something like that. You understand? So, I mean, to us, if we see a picture, let's say, on a dime of liberty, or if we see a picture of Thomas Jefferson or something like that, we don't think in terms of venerating either this liberty on the dime, right, or Thomas Jefferson on the nickel, or anything like that. It's foreign to our way of thought, okay. But to the Roman, to the Greek, it was not foreign at all.
Right. Well, I'm thinking of the Japanese when they had Hirohito.
Right.
It was like a god to them. Yep.
Correct, correct.
So his image on there, on the Japanese coins, which I'm sure appeared, one wonders whether that would not have come under that.
Well, it's certainly something to consider from this point of view. Okay. All right. So, the Gemara wants to talk. Okay. The Gemara, first of all, it's discussing the first thing that we said. Right, you find kalim, right, whatever type of an object it may be, and what do we find upon it? A picture of the sun, or the moon, or a dragon, right? So the Maimra, the Gemara wants to know, does this mean to say, dilahanehu defalchelehu, that to these they worship, and of course we know that they worship the sun, they worship the moon, right? They worship the dragon, which represented some sort of a deity to them, and so on. But the Gemara wants to know, the midiach rina lo, and they don't worship anything else? Question mark. Rabinhu. So they ask the kasha on this by quoting a different statement, a baraisa, okay, or tzefta. Namely, it says, Hashoichet l'shum yamim, l'shum nahores, l'shum midbor, l'shum chamo, l'shum nevono, l'shum kechavim mazolois, l'shum mechir tzahagodol, l'shum shil shul cotton, hare elu zivchei mesim. Okay. Let me explain what this particular Gemara says, okay? Shechita to us is a sacred act, even though it's, you know, it's there for us, in order to enable us to be able to eat, But nevertheless, when the shochet shechts, what does he have to do? Has to make a bracha before he actually performs the shechita. Okay? If you have to shecht, you know, quite a few, one is enough for a day. But nevertheless, each day that he shechts, he has to make a bracha beforehand. In other words, to show that the shechita that we're doing it is in order to be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of, you know, shechita that we have received from Mount Sinai, so to speak. Okay? So this Gemara says that if somebody shechts, and he shechts, he says, invoking the name of what? Of oceans, Yamim. In other words, he's doing it in order to fulfill the will, shall we say, or to dedicate the shechita, you know, to oceans. Okay? Yamim. Rivers, the Horis. Midbar, a desert. Chama, the sun. Levona, a moon. Kochavim Mazolos, stars and planets. Okay? Mechoel, the archangel, Tsar HaGodol, literally the great prince. But Tsar is also used, meaning angel in Hebrew, of the Gemara. Okay? So he is considered, I guess, the main angel, the archangel, as we would say in English. Okay? In other words, I dedicate this shechita, you know, to the archangel Michael, right? Or even for a shilshul katan, a tiny worm, believe it or not. But even tiny worms were venerated. Goes to show you the depths of Avodah Zarah. Okay? So in that particular case, in all of these cases, Hare Elu Zivchei Mesim, right? So these are considered to be literally sacrifices to the dead, but it means sacrifices to idols. Okay? Sacrifice to idols. Right.
Yes. Sorry, I just have like a really kind of an unimportant question, but we would say like Lashem Shemayim, but here it's Lashum. What is Lashum?
Shum is Aramaic for name.
I see.
It's like the Hebrew word Lashem. Okay? Yeah. Hebrew word shum means something else. It's garlic. But in the Gemara, if you see the word lashum, lashum means like the Hebrew word shame.
Yeah,
okay. Right, okay. All right. So, Amar Abaye. So Abaye said, Niflach lechol the mishkache palche beitzar palche. Okay. Alright, so what he says over here is that first of all these things that we find, actually they can worship. They do worship. In other words, they worship mountains, rivers, etc., etc., etc. Of course, you know, if you read Greek mythology, for example, you find that there's a nymph or something connected with this river or with a, you know, things like that. In other words, they had all kinds of deities connected with various manifestations of them. So what Abayadan is saying is, look, whatever you can find, this is what they worship. Okay? However, on its loss, the chashive sairu falchalu. Okay, so these three that we mentioned specifically in the Mishnah, namely what? The sun, the moon, and a dragon, right? They make pictures of it, they depict them, and they worship them. Okay? But the midi achrina lenoi be'almodat. So he says, Baez being a little bit liberal, he says, the other things that are mentioned, you know, that you find depicted on various vessels, he says, it's not really so much for worship as it is for beauty. In other words, decoration, something like that. They want to decorate it by having a picture of whatever it may be, but not the sun, the moon, and the stars. In other words, he's trying to draw a distinction between what is mentioned in the Mishnah and what was mentioned in the quotation of Tosefta that was brought in. Okay? All right. Mankit Rav Sheshes Chumri Masniyoso Vitore. Rav Sheshes liked to gather difficult Gemaras. When you had a question, I mean, where there's a contradiction between one thing and another, so he liked to do it. And then he tried to explain it. Okay? So what did Rav Sheshes say? Okay, so he said, Kol ha-mazolos mutorin chutz b'mazol chama u'levono. Right? He decided that all the mazolos, in other words, planets, stars, and things like that, they would be permitted as designs upon objects, right? Except for the sun or the moon. Okay? The chol ha-partzufin mutoren chutz parts of odom. And likewise, you make decorations of various faces. Partzuf is a face in Hebrew. Language of the Gemara, right? Except for the face of a human being. In other words, if you wanted to make a picture of a dog, a horse, something like that, and put it on your favorite cup or something like that, you know, so that would be permissible, he says, but not to paint a human face on it. Sorry, my voice tonight is a little bit on the suffering side. Okay. No, I'm sucking upon this, trying to get a little moisture. Okay.
So, it's not only the face, but they also just said the moon and the. Didn't they just say the moon and the sun? As well?
The moon and the sun are prohibited, he right. says.
And
but,
it's got a face also.
But, huh?
And now they're human adding face. It's got a face.
Human face, like an emperor.
A human face is prohibited, he says.
Prohibited.
But. The face, let's say, if you paint a picture of an animal on it, an animal face on it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So that would not be prohibited.
Are human faces in the same category as the sun and the moon?
Yeah, yeah. From that point of view, correct. That okay. They're both yeah. prohibited, correct. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And then he says, V'chol atzuros mutoros, and all other kinds of depictions are also permissible, chutz mitzuras drakon, except for the dragon. Okay? So, we see that he's trying to reconcile the Mishnah and the Baraisa by saying that the Baraisa, although it expands upon, the prohibited three that we've already mentioned, mountains, rivers, deserts, whatever it may be, and so on. But the Mishnah stresses just those three. And he adds, however, you know, that the human face is another thing that is prohibited. Okay. So the three that we mentioned, sun, moon, and dragon, as the Mishnah said. So far, this one says. Okay? Omamar. So, one of the teachers said, "Kol ha-mazolos putorin, chutz b'mazol cham levono." Right, that various heavenly bodies are permitted except for the sun and the moon. Okay. The word "mazol," by the way, I don't know if you noticed. I mean, we think in terms of mazel, meaning, you know, mazel tov, you know, good luck or something like that. Or either you have mazel or you don't have mazel or something like that, right? However, again, the original idea of mazel actually is constellation or planet or something like that. Mazel, okay?
That's where you got your...
Right, and the signs of the zodiac, for example, I mean, let's say we have what in English is called Pisces, which really means fish, right? So that would be Mazel Dogi. Mazel Tole, this is the sheep, the ram, that's, you know, and what are we now in New York? Right. Leo, okay, that's Aryeh, and so on, Ari, right, and so on. So these are also called mazalas, okay, yes, yes.
Two Pachamimi or want to raise an objection to this. It doesn't make any sense that other celestial bodies or constellations are permitted, because the Romans were well known for worshipping Orion and Pleiades. So why in heaven's name, if we found a vessel with pictures of, you know, the constellations, maybe let's say the Pleiades, why would we consider that as something that we could handle?
I said, to begin with, Rav Sheshes finds difficulties. He's trying to reconcile difficult and contradictory ideas. Okay? Understand? I mean, the point that you're making is correct. I mean, we know that as far as the planets are concerned, they're named after various Roman deities, right? Mars, Venus, Mercury, you name it. I mean, right. Yeah. So, there is a contradiction, but that would go to the first part where he said before that they worship everything that, that they can find or something like that. However, these three are apparently the most popular depictions. That's the reason why they
the sun, the moon, and the dragon, right?
But you're right. And as we'll see, not everybody is in agreement either, you know, with these things.
Dragon must be a constellation, no?
Yeah, there is a constellation by that name, definitely. Drago, the dragon. Well, you have all kinds of constellations.
That's interesting.
Scorpion, right? Akrav, right?
Shakespeare.
Yes. Which constellation is Agola?
What's that?
Agola.
What is that?
Wait, which constellation is Agola?
Right. Don't know. Answer is the Dipper. Agola literally means wagon. Agola means wagon. Agola means wagon. This is why in English sometimes they used to call it Wayne, W-A-I-N, which is old English for wagon, right? Right.
Wagon?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Others call it the bear, you know, because it's based on the Roman word Ursa. You know, that was the name that they gave it.
Right.
Ursa. Yeah, right. Ursa. Major, Ursa, Minor, you know.
They're all the same thing. They all have the Dipper. They're all different names for the Dipper.
Yes.
Well, I didn't realize that. I thought that the bear was a different one.
No.
Okay.
No. Okay.
The Dipper is the only one I know.
All right.
One more than I know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But we have to realize, you know, that we're not finished yet with this. Rav Sheshes is still trying to work his way out of it. And I think Amar is also a little bit questioning the same problem. Okay? All right. So, comes up with a different answer for the moment. Okay? Hocha says, but my asking, tell me, what are we talking about at this particular point? Okay? Ilemo, if we say, the Oitzer And that's what I said a few minutes ago, if you remember, namely, that we're talking about, can he make a picture of these things, right? Not that he found, as the Mishnah says, but that he's actually making something like this, right? So, Iba Esa, if that's the case, that we're talking about making these pictures, then Kol HaMazolos Mishori, are we permitted actually to make depictions of any of the heavenly bodies, which is the best translation of the word muscle in this particular case, right? Lord Siv, don't we have a pasuk that says, Lo sa'asud iti, you shall not make together with me. Pasuk reads, Lo sa'asud iti ele echesev el hezahov, Lo sa'aselochem. In other words, don't make anything, an idol, gold, silver, anything, you know, and say that they exist together with me, E.T., okay? Don't make. And what is the application? Slotsasun kidemus shaboshai hameshamshim nefonai babora. Do not make a depiction of any of my servants, the Rebbeinu Shalom, in other words, anything in this world, you know, which serves him, that serve me, Bamorom, up in heaven. Okay? In other words, what? No depictions of any heavenly bodies. Okay? Elipshita, so we have to come to the conclusion that what the Mishnah is talking about is only what? B'motzei. In other words, that you find such an object. What should you do with it? Can you keep it, throw it away, or what? That's the point, okay? Right. Ichtidnan, and even as we have learned, you know the Mishnah, right? In the Mishnah, Habotzi Caleb, Balehem, Suez Habits, Suez the Mother, Suez Rakun, Yodokhem Yom HaMelech, right? So, the Mishnah says specifically that if you find, right, any of these objects, upon them the depiction of the sun, the moon, the star, dragon, whatever, right, throw them into the Yamsuf, into the Yom HaMelech.
Excuse me, but we doesn't necessarily to throw into
it. This is the apple. That's understood.
Understood.
Right. I mean, right. You're just going to bring him down over there and do nothing with it.
Right.
You understand? Well, obviously,
that's
what
we're doing.
Right. No, the whole lift only means something to bring. So.
Right.
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 Okay.
Right.
I follow you. All right. So, there's a little bit of a problem. Say, if we're talking about somebody finding Emo Mitzioso, then let's take a look at the middle statement that was made in the Baraisa, which said, Kol HaPartzufes Butorin Chutz MePartzuf Odom, right? Which said that all faces are permitted except for the face of a human being, right? So he says, Ibimotse parts of Odom be also, but if you find an object which has the picture of a human being on it, is that prohibited? In other words, he's trying to say that there's a difference between what? Between Osev, making it, not allowed to make
finding
picture
it.
Right, and finding it. Okay. This is what he's trying to say. The Hotnan, didn't we learn? Hamotze Kalim. Balehem Suez Hamot, Suez Levonas, Suez Drakat, Yotchem Yamabelach, right? We set all these things again, the sun, the moon, so on, throw it into the Yam HaMelech, right? Suez Drakat, in parts of Odom, lo. Are we to say that what is mentioned? Those three. You're not allowed to make a depiction of a dragon. So does it mean that if you make a human face, you shouldn't get rid of it? You understand?
Yeah,
a little bit. Right. So, again, we have to come to the conclusion that we're talking about the Ursa, that we're talking about actually a Jew making it. And as in the case of Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yehoshua, who said, Ibe Ursa, Amos Seifo, Kolatsuris Mitoris, Chutz Mitoris Draka.
Are we still talking about Kelim here?
Yeah. Yes. If we're talking about making, then I have to say, look, the ending of the statement says that all figures are permitted except for that of a dragon. The Iba Ursa, and if we're talking about making something, right? So is Draka Miyasir. Did we read in there that they're allowed to make the the image of a dragon? The hawk seer, doesn't the Torah simply say Lisasuniti Elohe Hesav Elohe Sahab? Do not make idols of gold or silver, right? But does it mention the word dragon? So we'll go on to the next page. Does it mention it? Okay, so Mem Gimel, Mem Gimel. Here's Mem Gimel. Yeah. And should we say Hanein these, yes, but Suris Dragon, no. No, gold and silver don't make, but the picture of a dragon, no. Elup Shita, so he says, I have to come to the conclusion that Bemotze, we're still talking about only somebody finding these things. And what do you do when you find it? Vichuditnan, as we have learned, Hamotzi Caleb, I mean the Mishnah says specifically, if you find Caleb, right, Valehem Suez Hama, right, and you find the figure of the sun, right, on it, right? So, Reish of a Sefer, the Motze, so are we to say that the first part and the last part of the statement deal with finding, Umitziyosa Be'oise, and the middle part says don't make? So Amar Abaye, in, yeah, true, says yes. Reish of a Sefer, that might say, Umitziyosa Be'oise, yeah. Good way to explain it, says Abaye. But Rava always argues with Abaye and says, Rava Omar, Kula Bemotze. We're talking about finding only. Umitziyasa, in the middle statement, Rabbi Yehuda he. This represents the view of Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, as we've learned, Rabbi Yehuda Moisif, after Musme Niko, Visar Apis, okay, that if you find the also the depiction or the picture of a woman who is nursing her child, okay, or Serapis, right, then in that case it is prohibited. I'll come back to that in a moment. And he explains, I'll come back to the second. Meiniko, he says, the woman who is nursing Al Shem Chava, that represents Eve, Shemeiniko Kol Olam Kulo, right, who is literally the one nursing all mankind, okay? And Serapis, right, Al Shem Yosef, that is a depiction of Yosef, Shesar Omefis is called Olam Kulo. Sar, he departed from what? He departed from the evil that he was tempted, you know, by Potiphar's wife, right? And he made the entire world peaceful by providing them with food, right? Okay. The who the naked greva, the kokail. All right. So he says, when are these prohibited? If you see that they are holding a scale and they are measuring, and she, the nocta bain de communica, when she has a child and she is nursing it. Okay, so now I have to get back to what are we talking about? Okay.
Very inconsistent.
Depends. No, all right. But what he's trying to say is this. Okay, these depictions, you know, are wrong. They're a bit so. But so is the following two depictions. One of the nursing woman and the other one of Sarapis. Okay? Sarapis. Come to that in a second now. Okay? The Meiniko, I mean, they gave a Jewish interpretation by saying that the Meiniko is who? It's Mother Eve, okay? And Sarapis, they said, is Joseph. But obviously, we have to ask the following question. What do they have to do with Avodah Zarah? The answer is, they have nothing to do. We really have to go back to the thought process of what was going on in the world of Avodah Zarah. What were these things? So, one explanation is that the nursing mother is a depiction of the Egyptian goddess Isis, who was worshipped not only in Egypt, but she was worshipped in Asia Minor and also worshipped in Rome itself, okay? Because the Romans liked the Sabbath. So obviously they had a picture of her as a nursing mother. Lahavdil, who does it remind you of?
Oh, Mary.
Of course. Of course.
Mary.
Mary. Right. I mean, you've seen all these Italian pictures of the Renaissance and so on, right? Where they pick these things and so on.
This is
before. So, I'm telling you, originally it was Isis, but the idea persists. You understand? The idea persists even. Right. What they did in many cases is simply to take pagan ideas and put a new interpretation on the pagan ideas. Right. Right. That's what I'm saying.
That happened with a lot of the things that were incorporated for pagan things.
Correct. Now, the other one, Sarapis. Okay. In reality, it's Serapis. Serapis, yes, S-E-R-A-P-I-S, Serapis, as one word, okay? This was the name given by the Greeks and the Romans to another Egyptian combination of deities in this case, okay? It's like a combination of the name Osiris and Apis. Osiris was the god of the underworld.